Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, June 18, 2018, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members.
Welcome to the Federal Society's telephone conference call. This afternoon, our conversation is on the LabMD Incorporated versus Federal Trade Commission decision, which was released last week. My name is Michael Wallen, and I am the Assistant Director of Practice Groups here at the Federal Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us Neil Chilson, who is a Senior Research Fellow for Technology and Innovation at the Charles Koch Institute. We also have with us Scott Delacourt, who is a partner at Wiley & Ryan. After hearing from our speakers, we will go to audience Q&A. Thank you for speaking with us. Scott, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks to people who are listening in. I thought, given the possibility of different levels of familiarity with the case, I might start with a quick recap of what went on here and what the 11th Circuit decided. LabMD was a cancer detection facility that had personal information regarding some of its patients, and some of that information was stored on a workstation where an employee was using file-sharing software to listen to music, which made information on the workstation accessible to the outside. A firm called Tyversa, which was either a security firm or a hacker, depending on your perspective, accessed a document containing sensitive information of around 9,000 patients. It was never shown that anyone other than Tyversa accessed the data or that any misuse was made of the data. The FTC investigated and brought an administrative complaint asserting that LabMD's data security practices were unreasonably lax and therefore unfair under Section 5 of the FTC Act. The case was initially heard by an FTC administrative law judge who sided with LabMD but was overturned by the full commission. LabMD then appealed the commission's decision to the 11th Circuit, where the issues before the court were first, whether unauthorized access to data alone, without any misuse, constitutes consumer harm that rises to unfairness under Section 5, warranting FTC enforcement action. And the second issue, what is the level of notice required regarding what the FTC deems to be reasonable data security practices, the failure to provide which gives rise to unfairness under Section 5 and potential enforcement action. Interestingly, the 11th Circuit did not really decide either of those issues. Instead, it held that the cease and desist order that the FTC imposed on LabMD requiring reasonable data security practices and an overhaul of the company's data security practices generally was unenforceable because it lacked specificity as to what exactly was required. I think I'll stop there. And Neil, do you want to fill in on the facts or what occurred here?
Yeah, so I think I would just add that as all litigation, as much litigation is, the procedural background for this case is actually quite complicated. And if you look at the full docket and the number of times it moved up and down between, for example, the ALJ and the commission, and then even between the commission and federal court, it's quite complicated. But I think Scott covered the highlights and the points that really matter for our decision today. And I think with that, maybe we can jump into some of the questions. I think this is a pretty interesting case and one that I've been paying attention to for a long time and that I know that the data security community more generally, as well as people who like to keep an eye on what the FTC does, this is a case that I think people were very interested in. And so I'm glad to be here to talk about it with all of you.
All right. So the first question we have is, what are the broader implications of the case beyond the impact on the particular litigants?
So I'll just jump in here and say that I think that this case, despite not having answered, I think Scott quite accurately characterized it as not really having answered the two main questions, This does have a lot of implications for the FTC's data security orders going forward. The court was very skeptical of the way that the FTC adopted the order in the LabMD case, or what was contained in the order, and essentially said that it wasn't specific enough to say reasonable data security, focusing very much on the reasonable data security prong of the order. FTC orders in the data security space and other spaces, they have lots of other provisions as well. The court didn't really talk about any of the other provisions, many of them which are quite specific but are not necessarily focused on the data security issue that was the core of this case. And so the reasonable security requirement that was in the order is one that the FTC has used in many of its cases in the data security space, I think with the aim of largely not being too prescriptive. The court found that to be a flaw of the order and said that to enforce such an order would require the FTC and the defendant, in this case LabMD, to re-litigate various factual matters in front of the court about what was reasonable security. And the court said that that was not a proper way to do an enforceable order. That made this order unenforceable. So I think the implications are that the FTC will need to be more specific in its orders and more prescriptive in its orders about what a company would need to do to comply with the order. I would say from a policy perspective, it will be interesting to see how the FTC balances the need for, under the 11th Circuit's decision, the need for specificity against the challenges in the data security space of maintaining something that's reasonable and not doing a sort of checklist view of security, which most security experts say is a good way to still get in trouble because the space moves so fast, the checklist can be out of date pretty quickly. So that's probably the biggest implication. There will be some implications for how the FTC writes orders in future cases in the data security space specifically, but perhaps in other areas as well.
Yeah, I agree with Neil that there's going to be broad impacts from this case, and I think you can look to two immediate ones being a limitation on the FTC's authority, both with respect to remedies and potentially with respect to the kind of cases it might bring in the future. The decision, of course, is limited to the particular litigants. But the court's holding can be a constraint on the FTC's data breach authority. The most obvious and direct limitation is on the kinds of remedies that can be ordered. If a case is litigated and success in a case like this likely means more cases involving data breaches are likely to be litigated where they may have settled before, the FTC is going to need to spell out with greater specificity what reasonable data security means for a particular company, just as Neil was saying. And that's not at all an easy thing to do. Ordering that some identified shortcoming be corrected is easy and straightforward, but outlining a comprehensive data security plan, that's not easy because industry standards change and technology changes. But I think beyond remedies, the case will make the FTC even more circumspect in identifying Section 5 violations in the first place, because it will know that it's going to be put to its proofs to show a company's data security practices were unreasonable.
Yeah, and I might add there, we might see a shift towards more cases brought under deception. I would note that many of the FTC's data security cases include a deception count where the company made a claim of some kind about the types of security that it had. The order here is focused on essentially what was the unfairness portion of the LabMD complaint, and so deception cases we might see more cases brought under that, or we might see more cases where the unfairness practice that's alleged is is not so much unreasonable data security, but for example, in the Lenovo case, there was a very specific count of unfairness. This is a case in which the Lenovo, one of the big PC manufacturers, had installed middleware software onto a laptop for the purposes of advertising, but which created a pretty sizable security problem on these people's PCs. And so in that case, the commission had a general data security unfairness count that said it was unfair that they didn't have reasonable data security, but it also had a very specific unfairness count that said that the installation of this kind of software was unfair. So we might see more of a focus towards complaints that have very specific activities alleged as unfair.
Yeah, I agree with that. The deception count is always the easier one to bring and a little bit more less fraught when it's litigated. The downside for the enforcers is that I think companies are kind of wise to that and are being more careful about the kinds of representations that they make about the security that they offer, whereas at one time a company may have said, your data is secure with us. You'll find now more commonly more nuanced representations that say, of course, rigorous data security cannot prevent the activities of a determined hacker, and no security is perfect, this sort of thing. That may not be the get out of jail card that it sounds like. If you've made some representation that you're taking steps and you've been quite lax, then you may have deception anyway. But the easy cases for the enforcers are on deception, I think, becoming fewer and further between.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you both. Another question is, one of the issues before the 11th Circuit was the scope of the FTC's Section 5 enforcement authority in data breach cases. How did the court expound about that, and what do you think the fallout is from their reasoning?
Well, it's a really interesting point. I think that was one of the key issues that had come up in the Wyndham case, and in that case, the circuit court or the Court of Appeals had decided that the FTC under Section 5 could bring data security actions. Interestingly, Wyndham is not mentioned at all in the LabMD case. It was in a different circuit, so that's not problematic, but it is interesting. It was interesting to me to see that. The court does sort of take a tour through the FTC's unfairness authority under Section 5. It looks at the statute, and it looks back towards an older test that the FTC used for unfairness, and which is arguably still sort of the superstructure around which the FTC does unfairness. That was set forth in the cigarette labeling rules or statement. That was a three-factor test that was then talked about by the Supreme Court in Sperry and Hutchinson in dicta and sort of ratified. And that test was a three-part test that's talked about causing consumer injury, consumers, competitors, or other businesses substantial injury. Two, offending public policy as established by statute, the common law, or otherwise, and three, immoral, unethical, or unscrupulous. That was a sort of framework that the FTC in the 1970s got into a lot of trouble under. It started to rely heavily on public policy, which it interpreted to mean if it found a matter that was of some interest to the public, that it could either pass a rule, which is what it had tried to do a couple times, or bring cases under unfairness. And that when the FTC did some of this, it got in a lot of trouble from Congress, and Congress actually dialed back, defunded it for a period, and when the commission came back open, there was some reform underway, and they adopted a new unfairness statement in the early 80s that really focused on the first prong of that original test and gave three sort of sub-prongs to that. And that is what is colloquially today referred to as the unfairness test, which it means that there has to be a substantial injury that's not avoidable by consumers and that's not outweighed by benefits to consumers or to competition. That has sort of colloquially been called the unfairness test since the mid-80s. And it's interesting to have the LabMD decision goes back to that earlier test and talks about the public policy prong of that test. I'm not quite sure how to read the impact of that on the FTC's authority. The court, after having done all this analysis, then ultimately concludes that it wasn't going to decide whether or not it was just going to assume for this case that there was a violation of Section 5 unfairness, and then it transitioned over to the order and said the order was unenforceable. So I'm not quite sure how to take the court's reading of what unfairness is, but that there are at least some implications for not just data security cases and how unfairness might be applied, but how unfairness generally, you know, the FTC brings lots of unfairness cases that aren't data security cases. I think it'd be really interesting to see how people talk about the 11th Circuit's decision here on unfairness and that analysis. And I actually wrote a piece on techliberation.com, if anybody's interested, on this sort of obscure and possibly dicta part of the LabMD decision. So I'd refer anyone who's interested to that.
Yeah, I would, like Neil, was a little bit puzzled by what the court did here in terms of the question that was presented to it about the FTC's authority under Section 5 to bring data breach enforcement cases. It might have gone a couple of different ways. I mean, one way would have been for the 11th Circuit to have said affirmatively that Wyndham is the law of the land, that the FTC has the authority under Section 5 to bring data breach enforcement cases. And while that wouldn't have solved the matter, it would have gone a long way towards solving the matter, because two circuits having ruled that way, you know, it's kind of, you can see the momentum and the writing on the wall. The other way it might have gone is the court may have decided that, you know, we disagree with the Wyndham case. And so the Federal Trade Commission does not have data breach enforcement authority under Section 5. That's reading too much into the act. That would have set up a circuit split, and the issue would have then gone to the Supreme Court. What's interesting is that here they didn't do either of those things. They really sidestepped the issue. Wyndham is not mentioned at all, and as Neil said, the court just assumes that a Section 5 violation has occurred. And then continues on to discuss the merits of the remedy. You know, why did that happen? I'm not sure we'll ever really know. But Neil mentioned earlier that the procedural process of this case was somewhat unusual, and I think part of that, the long pendency of this case, the time that it was before the court, was unusual. The case was originally filed in December of 2016 and not decided until June of this year. So it was pending for over a year and a half. And, you know, while we can never go behind the curtain, where a case is pending before an appellate court for a long period of time, the speculation is often that there is a disagreement among judges on the panel about what to do with the case. And in this case, the very narrowness of the decision and the fact that while there is a discussion of issues, they aren't decided, and the focus in deciding the case is this very narrow focus on deciding that the cease and desist order is unenforceable. That may well have been because there were disagreements on among the panel of the 11th Circuit on what to do on these harder questions, like what does Section 5 mean about the FTC's authority, and that the way to resolve that was to come to a very narrow decision.
That's as good an explanation of it as I have heard for sure. As good a speculation as I could do. So I have nothing to disagree with there for sure.
And I candidly admit rank speculation.
Does this case make it harder or easier for the FTC to bring enforcement actions in data breach cases?
I think it does make it harder for the FTC to bring enforcement cases. It's not an accident that the FTC hasn't provided a lot of specificity about what is reasonable data security. As Neil mentioned, this is a very difficult and fraught area. If they identify certain practices, a certain level of encryption, for example, those practices are likely to be shown to be ineffectual in the next breach or to quickly become outdated relative to other better or more secure practices. And the FTC doesn't want to be in that business, and it isn't particularly well equipped to be in that business of setting data security standards. That's something better done by industry and maybe better done on an industry-specific basis where there are different needs and exigencies for different practices. It's not an accident that they have sought to have a be less prescriptive, as Neil says. I think another thing that will become more difficult as a result of the LabMD case is the FTC is likely to face more opposition when it investigates and brings enforcement actions, and that the LabMD case itself may shift the leverage dynamic to some degree. Until the Wyndham case, no one had really litigated the FTC's data breach enforcement authority under Section 5. Nearly everyone entered a consent decree, and the FTC has entered over 50 such consent decrees with various companies and has pointed to them as a sort of a common law, giving a sense of what constitutes reasonable data security. In the consent decree process, the FTC has a freer hand on remedies because there's a back and forth voluntary negotiation. I mean, voluntary in the dynamic of law enforcement, but the parties can agree to things that wouldn't necessarily be accepted by an Article III court. With the LabMD decision out there, parties are likely to negotiate harder on remedies and to litigate more frequently.
I agree with all that. I think the FTC will also be facing some possible new arguments about how the unfairness test works. And while I don't know that those will be prevailing, I think anytime there are new arguments that have even a slight stamp of approval from a federal court, that then staff has to spend time dealing with those arguments. And so I would expect litigation in this space is a little more difficult. Bringing cases in this space is a little bit more difficult. And then I would say, sort of more on the pragmatic level, I think this will emphasize cases. I think this will have the effect of emphasizing cases at the FTC that have very clear drawn lines between the activities of the company and the injuries to the consumer. I think those will still be cases where the FTC will be relatively safe in bringing, but I think they will make sure to get more of their ducks in a row before moving into an investigation or before moving into settlement discussions or litigation. So yes, it does make it harder for the FTC to bring enforcement cases.
Great. Another question to get to is, the LabMD case raises issues about how law is made in the administrative process. With respect to privacy cases brought under Section 5, there are just a couple of litigated cases. The FTC maintains that large larger number of consent decrees is also a body of precedent regulated companies should look to as a guidance on applicable standards. What does that LabMD case mean, if anything, for development of precedent by consent decree?
So, yeah, I think this is an interesting aspect of the case because there have been lots of questions raised about consent decrees as being a common law on reasonable data security. Some parties think that that is a very reasonable practice and provides good guidance. And in fact, there are industry groups that have gone to the effort of abstracting from those various consent decrees the elements that they see as firm guidance that companies should be aware of and should take into account when formulating their data security plans. Others say, you know, that's not really an appropriate source of law because of the leverage dynamic between the parties and also because many of those consent decrees are very fact-specific, particular to particular industries and companies. But in terms of the impact, for parties that have already entered consent decrees, the LabMD case may have a limited impact. Two parties can agree to remedies in a consent decree, which is like a contract, even if those remedies wouldn't be accepted by an Article III court if the matter were litigated. So it won't be an out to your consent decree that what you agreed to is lacks specificity because you have agreed to it. Now, if you had litigated it, then a court might decide that it was not enforceable, but you may not have that same luxury where you've agreed to it. Now, that doesn't mean that the FTC doesn't have any exposure. If the FTC is to allege a consent decree violation, that a party's not providing reasonable data security as required under a consent decree, then LabMD offers a defense that the consent decree doesn't provide specificity about the data security practices required. As to the use of consent decrees as a common law, the LabMD decision seems to call that practice into question or at least open it up to challenge. The remedies ordered in consent decrees tend to be specific to the party involved in the particular circumstances, and they don't seem to provide the level of specificity the 11th Circuit was looking for, at least with respect to a cease and desist order. As to the level of notice as to what reasonable data security means before bringing a Section 5 enforcement action, that remains an open question.
I think I would just add that I think there's some make a distinction between the sort of common law of the consent decrees, the orders, and what's in them. And the more, if you're looking for what the violation of the law is, you might look more towards the complaints that issue. Those are typically much less negotiated between the two parties, and I think that is the clearer statement typically of what the FTC believes is the legal violation outside of the whatever negotiations the company and the FTC might enter and memorialize in an order. And sort of building on that, it's interesting how much time the decision in the 11th Circuit spends on walking through how litigation works both at the ALJ level and then in the court, and then also like what might be the different mechanisms for enforcing these orders. It walks through a couple hypotheticals. I'm not sure that those undermine the I think those accurately describe the process, but it's interesting how much time they spent on that relative to other things. I'm not sure that this changes the usefulness of consent decrees and the complaints that accompany them for lawyers who are advising clients or for clients who are looking for examples of what the FTC is thinking. I think those are still useful documents for that. And while that's not the, I think that's not the paradigmatic formulation for what common law is, I think these one can still learn a lot from looking at what the commission found to be a Section 5 violation, and then how it came to agreement about how that violation could be remedied. For if you're trying to advise a client, I think those are still quite useful.
All right. Well, let's. There's a few more questions to get to, but let's go ahead and open it up to audience questions and mix a few from the audience in here if there are any on the line. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter the star key and then the pound key on your telephone. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer the questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter the star key and then the pound key on your telephone keypad. We already have a question lined up, so without further ado, let's move to our first question.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Mike Doherty, the CEO of LabMD. I'll try hard to make it really brief and keep it as a question. But and that is, to me, and I would really want your feedback on this if you see this, but of course I've lived through this for 10 years, and I think a lot of the details of the courts really in the oral argument. Every lawyer I know that never stays animated and stays monotone through all sorts of academic analysis lost their mind when they read or heard the oral argument and how Judge Choplat and Robredo and specifically came at the FTC for how they conducted themselves through this, saying such things as, you know, you got annihilated, were you working with criminals, you know, thank you for that concession for saying that you can, you know, make up, you can avoid rulemaking and you can adjudicate, you can make up rules through adjudication. So to me, this is really a notice case and a due process case, that there were no standards. And coming from 30 years in medicine, LabMD and myself as CEO and our lawyers that worked in healthcare were blown away by this argument that we can't manage technology without with specifics when there are no specifics in medicine. If you guys think technology moves fast, try cancer. and so it was laughable, the lack of that argument, to those that work within an industry that is well regulated and seems to get along more collaboratively. It was a big deal. So this was a war. Make no mistake about it. It still is. It was persecution through process. The details will show that out, and those will still coming, but I would recommend everyone read the oral argument to get a lot of what was going on, because certainly when I say it, in a way, it's the least credible, because people see myself as somewhat of an extra grind. But anyway, so I don't know what your feedback would be on my comments.
Let me just jump in and say, well, first of all, congratulations on the win, Mike. I do think that a lot of people, when they heard the oral argument, knew it wasn't going well for the FTC. I think people weren't really surprised by the outcome in this case, what the final verdict was. I think that there was a sort of anticipation that the court was not finding the FTC's. I just think there this is a close case. And I think people were expecting a loss or at least a very narrow decision. I think what is more surprising is how little this case answered the big hard questions. And I think Scott already laid out some of the reasons why that might be. It doesn't do a very good job of addressing the due process point, except sort of backwards by looking at the order. And the question is, how will this be applied in the future? And I think we'll have a chance to see that. But the outcome, maybe not a surprise. The sort of way that the court got there, I think, was quite surprising to me, and I think probably to other people as well.
But don't you think that's because they dance around getting overturned? Or, I mean, I think your point on disagreements is fantastic, because there's just a lot of people within the system that have nothing to do with technology or medicine that just do not want to take power away from the government. And there was just a really hard way to slice the baby without this thing getting nowhere. I mean, the government has an unbelievable amount of power and one big echo chamber. And I, in a way, given the realities of the judiciary today and the legal system and the regulatory system, I actually thought it was pretty darn brilliant.
Maybe that's not a question.
Yeah, no, Mike, this is Scott Delacorte. Yeah, and I second the congratulations. I know it was a long, very long road, and you had to show a lot of staying power to get to the victory. So congratulations on that. You know, in terms of the court's decision, yeah, I think the judicial process is part of the reason the decision came out so narrowly. On the questions that were presented in the case, on the Section 5 authority and on what I would call the informational injury question, whether exposure of data alone without misuse is a violation of Section 5. Those are really tough questions. And the court, I think, was very concerned about where it might not have liked what the Federal Trade Commission had done or agreed with its take on those questions. I don't think it was in a position to answer those questions and support them with the authorities available to it in a different way. Not meaning that it couldn't have come to a different decision, but again, looking at the process, as you mentioned, and the concern about being overturned, I don't think they had a clear roadmap to coming out a different way. So instead, they went to a very narrow decision that enabled them to get rid of this case without making choices that were on very difficult issues that were going to have a more widespread effect. You know, to address a couple of other things you mentioned, in terms of the conduct in the case and the FTC's conduct and sort of the issues around working with Tyversa and whether or not they're a legitimate actor and everything that went on there was appropriate. That was something that came up at oral argument and that the court had some concerns with. I think that has continuing relevance as to next steps here, because there is, of course, the issue of whether the Federal Trade Commission would seek a rehearing en banc or would seek to appeal to the Supreme Court. I would guess, and I don't know, it's a new group and they'll have to think hard about it, but I would guess that they'll let this decision stand and not appeal further. And the bad facts are part of the reason why. I think they will have other data security cases to bring, Section 5 enforcement cases. Data breaches happen all the time, and they will want to confront these issues where they have a much cleaner record than the one they have in this case. And it's actually surprising to me that they pursued this case as far as they did with some of the bad facts involved. And then just to address one other issue that you raised about, you know, you think providing standards is difficult in a fast-evolving area like data security, try medicine and try cancer. That's a good point. And I think, you know, that's part of what the next hard question before the Federal Trade Commission will be. How can we provide some greater specificity on those issues and what reasonable data security means and what are our options? And one of them would be, you know, a more process-oriented requirements like medicine. Medicine isn't static. It doesn't say, you know, do these things and do only these things, but it sets out what are established standards of care. And as long as you follow those prescribed standards of care, if something goes wrong, you're not exposed to liability. And you can imagine a similar construct to that for data security. And that may well be one of the things that the new commission will explore.
Let's move to our next question.
This is John Vecchione at Cause of Action. My question is about the FTC's next steps if they don't go for en banc or they don't ask for cert. And it's 3-0. It's a 3-0 decision, and there's no circuit split on the issue that I'm aware of, so I don't think they can go very far. But their public comments have been that we're looking at our next steps, which I guess has the advantage of being true. But what they have two courses of action, it strikes me, try to cabin the 11th Circuit decision so it doesn't go to other circuits and it has no effect to best they can ignore it, or they can incorporate it in how they proceed on data security cases. Which do you think it'll be?
Well, I'll go first there. This is not a group that is inclined to ignore a decision of the 11th Circuit. The group that has the new Federal Trade Commission and the new commissioners who are in place, like the ones before them. But I say this is a particular merit of the of this group and the new General Counsel Alden Abbott. They're very rule of law folks and very much will give a close read to the 11th Circuit's decision. I'm sure they've read it many times already, and will take it into account in deciding what kinds of remedies they can order in cases that they're already negotiating, two, what kind of cases they can bring for violations of consent decrees, and then three, they'll be thinking about the broad question of what does this mean for our authority and the notice we have to give before bringing an enforcement case in the first instance. So I think it'll be between the two options you outlined, either ignore it or take it into account in developing their practices going forward. I think it'll very much be the latter.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. As I mentioned earlier, I think this will have an impact on how the FTC writes its orders going forward, and also in the case selection that it chooses to bring, and also the legal theories that it chooses to apply. I think where there's an option to not use an unfairness count, I think they will avoid doing so and focus on deception. So I do think this will be part of this conversation inside of the building about how to bring cases in a way that's compliant with this order. As we've mentioned, the order is quite narrow, and so the conversation might have been much harder if this decision had gone beyond the more narrow focus that it had. I don't know, however, what the commission is going to do about the analysis of unfairness that's, arguably in dicta. To me, it has the slight downside, or potentially a big downside, of moving the FTC's focus of its unfairness enforcement away from consumer injury and also starting to think again about public policy questions. And as I mentioned, the history of using that prong of the old Sperry-Hutchinson test was pretty problematic for the FTC. So it's my hope that the FTC continues to focus on consumer injury in its unfairness analysis, and that this decision doesn't shift that focus away. I don't think that's very likely with this batch of commissioners or the staff that are there. I think the long-established unfairness statement formulation that's captured in Section 5N is pretty solid at this point. But it is a little bit concerning to me, and I am curious to see how that shakes out.
Hey Neil, I would just comment on that because you had referenced this earlier, and I just wanted to outline it a little because I don't know if this is an issue that everyone on the call will be familiar with. You've been traveling these circles a longer time, but this is really a sleeper issue that has been identified in the case that may be the most significant aspect of the court's decision with respect to the FTC's authority. And while it's not part of the holding, as Neil mentioned, the 11th Circuit stated its view that Section 5 enforcement actions can't be based alone on consumer injury or even substantial injury, that the lack of data security must be unfair under some established legal standard, meaning either in violation of the Constitution, a statute, or the common law. And while some data breaches may violate an industry-specific privacy statutes, many, and maybe even most, will not violate a statute, and they certainly won't violate the Constitution, which leaves us with the common law. And what the 11th Circuit looked at in this case, in the LabMD case, was whether failure to provide reasonable data security would be negligent under the common law. And that takes us back to torts in law school, where the elements of that are duty, breach, causation, and damages. And the question arises, well, where is the duty to provide reasonable data security coming from in the absence of a statute? So that, you know, if the, and again, that wasn't part of the court's holding, but that line of reasoning, if it were to, you know, be accepted by the FTC, be accepted by other courts, that's a fairly significant constraint on the commission's Section 5 authority, especially in the data breach area, where there is no, we don't have a general privacy statute in the U.S. like the GDPR in Europe. These would essentially be negligence cases.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting issue, and I am not a tort law expert, but the sort of common law elements that people had been talking about in the FTC's data security space, it's interesting where the court sort of took that into negligence. We were talking earlier about how the difficulty in establishing standards of behavior in this space by the FTC. I think that's accurate. That's an accurate concern, and that's why I think the FTC has typically tried to focus very hard on something that it on consumer injury, something that it can look at and see that there's an injury that's happened. And that's why that prong of the Sperry-Hutchinson test, I think, was elevated quite reasonably. And so it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, whether, you know, it goes more in a negligence direction and there is a common law that's built that way, or if in the end, there's a statutory approach to some of this. And, it's hard to predict right now, for sure.
We have another question on the line, so without further ado, let's move to our next question.
Hi, this is Ted Gebhardt in Arlington, Virginia. I hope these questions aren't too much in the weeds, but I'm just curious as to what was the basis of the ALJ's decision that the commission overturned. Was the decision to overturn it unanimous? And has there been any separate independent action been taken against the hacker?
So the ALJ's decision, this is Neil, if I'm remembering correctly, essentially applied the regular unfairness test and determined that there was not substantial injury here. I don't remember the exact details, but it was a much more straightforward application of Section 5 than the way that the 11th Circuit approached it in this case. It was not about the order. It was about the liability in the first place. The decision to overturn the ALJ's decision for LabMD was unanimous. It was, I believe, there was not a full commission at the time. However, I think it was, there may have been only three commissioners. There may have been four. I'm pretty sure it was not a full commission though at the time, which doesn't really have any legal import. I just wanted to add that as a caveat. As for prosecuting the other company, I'm not sure where that stands. That is. First of all, I think there's a lot of disagreement over whether they were a hacker or whether they were accessing on the network information that anybody else who had the LimeWire software could also have accessed. I think that was the factual that was the way that the FTC framed it in its complaint, and I think in the facts as the ALJ found them, talked about the LimeWire software providing that software, or providing that file out to anybody else who had that software. And so the question is that if you're taking advantage of that that software, is that hacking or not? It's something the court doesn't really get into, and I don't know that the FTC, I would just say the court didn't really get into that, and I don't think the ALJ did really either. So I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, just to, Ted, thank you for your question. And just to add to Neil's response, when the full commission or the commission as it was constituted at the time overturned the ALJ, in part it was they found that the ALJ had imposed what they believed or applied what they believed was the wrong standard. So the ALJ found that there was no injury because there had been no one outside of Tyversa had accessed the data, and there was no evidence of misuse, so there was no injury. But the full commission said that there is harm and unfairness under Section 5, even in the absence of an actual injury, if the potential for injury is large, even if the likelihood of injury is low. So it was this, they adopted a potential injury standard, and the idea was with a large number of patients' data having been exposed, even if the probability of there being misuse of that data was low, that was still injury that was sufficient to give rise to unfairness under Section 5. That was one of the issues raised in the 11th Circuit appeal, whether that was the correct standard, that again, the 11th Circuit did not respond to, sort of sidestepped. And it's the informational injury issue that is the commission has subsequently held a workshop on, and that I think may well be the subject of continued activity under the new commission. That's a live question that's out there is, you know, in a case of pure informational injury where data is exposed, but there's no evidence of injury resulting from that exposure, is there a cognizable harm that gives rise to enforcement under Section 5? And that's something that the 11th Circuit didn't answer.
Yeah, and I'll just tag in on that a little bit. Thanks for recapping the commission's decision much better than I did, Scott. There, you know, that sort of question about causes or likely to cause is straight from Section 5N of the FTC Act, where it describes, you know, it says that you cannot bring an unfairness action unless there was something that caused or was likely to cause a substantial injury. And then it goes through the rest of the test. There's a lot of question about what that cause or likely to cause, what those two prongs mean of Section 5N. And unfortunately, you know, the LabMD decision doesn't add much clarity on that, but I think that will be an ongoing question for sure.
Let's go to our next question. Caller, make sure your telephone is not on mute. Well, it appears that there's a connectivity issue with the caller, so we will move on, and there are no other questions in the queue. So before closing remarks, Neil and Scott, I wanted to ask, some commentators say LabMD raises the bar to finding a Section 5 violation, that even the presence of substantial injury arising from a data breach may not be enough to find a violation. What exactly does that mean, and do you think that analysis is fair?
Yeah, this is the conversation we were having earlier about the older test that has a public policy prong as well as a injury prong. So the FTC, since the unfairness statement, has largely been focused on whether or not a act or practice causes substantial injury that's not avoidable by the consumer and that is not outweighed by benefits to consumers or competition. That all sort of falls under the injury part of the old test. And this test, the test set forth by the 11th Circuit, says, well, that part is alone is not really enough, that there also has to be a public policy against that this harm violated, essentially. And so that's relatively new. I think it's both new in that this is a new combination of the prongs from Sperry and Hutchinson, and it's also old because it's a throwback to a prong of a much older test. And so that's what they're talking about when they say that. And I think we've maybe talked about that piece of dicta in this conversation, or possible dicta, quite a lot. So I won't really add more to that. But Scott, I don't know if you had any more to say.
Sure. I think you're right that it's both old and new. I mean, when I was first initiated into this practice and learning the unfairness policy, I had always learned that the injury was the whole ball game as to whether there was a violation, and that the other elements, whether it was against public policy and whether it was unethical and unscrupulous, were essentially vestigial, that they were included in the original policy, but that if there were injury, it would be found that a conduct was against public policy and also unethical and unscrupulous. And this LabMD decision suggests that, the public policy prong may not be vestigial. There may be some active requirements under that prong that need to be considered going forward.
And with just a few minutes left, we don't have any more questions on the line. So, Neil and Scott, I'll give you both a chance for any closing remarks.
Well, I'll just say this is a fascinating case. I think that it will have an impact. It doesn't answer a lot of the big questions that will need to be answered either through further cases or if Congress steps in. But I think we can expect to see some changes in FTC orders and in case selection, and it will be interesting to see how this develops going forward. I will say that there is a sort of potential, to the extent that the orders get more prescriptive due to that challenge of writing a checkbox list of things that provide good data security. I think there's some potential for some unintended consequences in this space. Interesting decision, and I think we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I agree that it's an interesting decision, that some of the big issues were not addressed by the court in its very narrow decision, and so it will now fall to the new FTC to address them. It's a legally very rigorous group and conscientious group, and I don't think that this will be just a speed bump. They'll take it seriously. And they've got some hard work ahead of them, because framing out what is reasonable data security, as Neil has said, is not an easy exercise. That said, I do think one thing we can expect to see going forward is for this Federal Trade Commission to be less entrepreneurial with the Section 5 authorities. There have been in the past some commissions that looked at Section 5 expansively with the idea of growing the FCC's jurisdiction in this space and asserting itself as the lead privacy regulator among the federal agencies. And I don't think this group will see a need to engage in that activity. I think they'll be looking at the authorities with more of a mind that the law is a constraint on them, and with a mind to being less entrepreneurial.
Thank you. And on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our experts for the benefit of their valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.